The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual host, guest, Random Reptoid, or Chupacabra may not necessarily reflect those of AM 950 Radio, its affiliates, or its sponsors. Now, it's time to step into the unknown. There are things people experience but never talk about. A shadow moving in the corner, flickering of the lights, a disembodied voice. We invite you to talk with us, share your story, share your experience, because this isn't just your story, this is our story. This is Ghost Box Radio with Greg Bakken.
And this is Ghost Box Radio on AM 950, where every night we talk about the paranormal, ufology, Bigfoot, and so much more. My name is Greg Bakken. Thank you for joining me on this fantastic Monday evening. It's Earth Day, which plays very well in our topic for tonight. And we're going to have a great show. I hope everyone had a great weekend. I spent the weekend, you know what it's like sometimes if you have like a small business, and I look at this show as like a small business. So I'm kind of like, you know, how do we make things better? So I totally re-strategized my social media, how I do social media. Let's put it this way. I don't know if anyone noticed I'm on social media to begin with, thus the re-strategizing. But I have this Twitter account. I know it's X. I will never call it X.
No.
I have this Twitter account, and it's like no one knows I exist on there. I have some followers and stuff, so I'm starting to use it more. Feel free to go and check me out over on Twitter, at MNGhostBox is my handle, whatever we call that these days. Whatever the kids are calling it, I really don't know. But yeah, I mean, I spent some time working on that this weekend and figuring out and getting one of those social, like, schedulers. I got a couple of those to kind of try out and see if it works. And, you know, it's a lot of fun, but boy, is it a lot of work. And the best payoff is if somebody would go over and like something I put up there. That's all I'm asking for. I'm not asking for a whole lot. Just like something, please, for God's sake. But once again, over at Twitter, at MNGhostBox, we're trying to have a presence over there in other places as well. So like we said, it's Earth Day. And I really felt there's no better way to talk about the Earth other than talking about the possible end of it. And, you know, as this show goes, we never do things quite the way that it should be. So while people are talking about planting trees, we're going to talk about how people think the Earth is going to end, the stories that have been populated around that. And it's just, you know, it's maybe it's one of those things, right, that you hear is like maybe what some of these stories have been from ancient beliefs might be able to stop us from doing it in the future. I don't really know. But we got back on with us, Tim Rayburn. And Tim was with us around Christmas last year talking about all these wonderful Christmas traditions. Well, Tim writes about a lot of stuff. And a book that we wanted to talk about, and it came out in January of 2022, is A History of the End of the World, Over 75 Tales of Armageddon and Global Extinction from Ancient Beliefs to Prophecies and Scientific Predictions. This is really what it's all about, folks. And this is a very fascinating subject. Tim, welcome back to Ghost Box Radio.
Thank you. Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here again.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you. It's amazing when, you know, I think about it as like, we just had you on a couple months ago. No, we had you on like 6 months ago.
It was December, I think, wasn't it?
It was.
Four and a half, something like that.
Right. Yeah. And we almost had our own end of the world situation here prior to the show. So, I mean, this is all very, you know, very apropos, I kid because it was kind of exciting. We just had some kind of misconnection going on there. We just had to figure it out, but it's kind of exciting because like the time is running down and it's like, well, let's see what we could do. And fix it. It always gets fixed, doesn't it?
It does. Yeah. It turned out it was just Bluetooth. So.
Just that pirate Bluetooth. So here's the thing, right? We got this book, it's kind of a downer subject in a sense, but it's also really a very interesting thing because yeah. now because we kind of connect a little bit later, I haven't read the book, but I'm going to because it's very interesting. But I mean, I think about this and I think about just like the term, which was ancient beliefs to prophecies. I'm curious how many of these kind of you read them and you think, well, that's just kind of silly, you know, when you when we're looking at it from a modern perspective, or is that sure. not the case at all?
Well, it's interesting. I think, you know, we in sort of our culture, the sort of what we call the Judeo-Christian culture, yeah. for better or worse, people have very much this idea of the Book of Revelation and the Apocalypse of St. John and all of that. And the Christian story of the end of the world is in the backs of people's minds, even if it's not something that people believe. Some people believe it very much, you know, and we have the evangelical Christians mm-hmm. who believe in a rapture, and you have various others. But a lot of people don't put much stock in it. And yet you'll find that a lot of our horror movies and such are still kind of based around this. If they have sort of satanic themes, it's about bringing about the end of the world. You have like the Omen films yep. and any number of things like that. So it's kind of steeped in that, whether we like it or not. And it's always in the backs of people's minds. But when you get away from that culture and look at some of the other predictions and some of the other things, there's a couple of things that stand out for me. One, they can be very different mm-hmm. from the Judeo-Christian sort of interpretations. And B, a lot of cultures have no concept of an end of the world at all. It's certainly not a global phenomenon by any means. There are many, many cultures that this is not a thing, that we've always been and we always will be. So the idea of it coming to an end, or perhaps they don't have an ending, but it's a cyclical thing. It comes to an end only to be reborn and start all over again in an endless cycle, which you would find, for instance, in Hinduism. You'll find that yes, the timeline degrades and gets worse and worse until everything falls apart, but then it's rebirth out of the universal oneness and starts all over again in an endless cycle that never ends. So there's that as well. So you find a lot of cultures actually don't have this concept of a true end of the world at all, which is interesting because it's a very striking contrast to what we are probably used to in Western religious beliefs and other sort of cultural upbringing.
What do you think, have you given any thought to the idea of when you say that? Because I guess it's really hard for me to believe that there are cultures that don't really think about that. It sounds like a great mm-hmm. place. What do you think the role of a possible end of the world plays in any society?
It's an interesting question. I think that it's, I would kind of spitball and guess here, but I think it's the idea that as life begins and you have a life and you live it and you die, there must be a bigger version of that out there somewhere, that culture begins or the entire cosmos begins, lives and dies at some point. And just as we all die, the world itself or the universe itself will die at some point. So I think that has a lot to do with it. It's sort of a mimicking of the life cycle in some sense, you know, and that would be my guess as to why on a deep psychological level, people with religious beliefs will tell you they'll put all of their things on top of it and say, well, it's because this and this and this. But I think that at the basic, most, you know, most fundamental level, that's probably the case. You know, we're born, we live and die. So why won't the world and the universe do the same thing?
Right, right. And I you know, it's kind of like a great gamble in a sense in our lives. Is this going to happen during our lives? Is this when it happens? And I wonder, like when you talk about certain religions that have that in there, that is this something that keeps people kind of, you know, obviously there's a lot of crime and stuff all over the world, but kind of keeps the people of religious faith kind of fearful of stuff like raptures. Like, well, it might be in my lifetime and I don't want to be the one that misses out because I was bad.
Yeah, I'm sure there's an element of that. And there's an incredible history of those. It's almost amusing. There's sort of apocalyptic cults and things going back centuries to people that had done all these, you know, mathematical and scientific calculations to determine the world will end on October 7th, 1823 or whatever. And they had their small group of followers and they all gathered on a hill and morning came and new afternoon came and evening came and they were still there on the on October 8th, you know, and it was hugely embarrassing. So they would often go back and recalculate. So, oh, we got the date wrong. It's actually October 27th. And then they went and do it again. And eventually what happens is that people sort of become disillusioned with this sort of thing. And these kind of things fall apart. And, you know, and those, in some sense, those can be harmless, but they can also, in more recent decades, they've proven to be very dangerous. As you've seen, one of the things I talk about toward the end of the book is these apocalyptic cults, things like Heaven's Gate, you know, the Hellbop Comet people and the Aum people in Japan and such, who really try to take everybody with them, you know, as well. They're either going to commit a terrorist act or they're going to kill everybody because of this. So that's when it like turns really bad. It goes from amusing to terrifying because these can cause real harm and real damage, you know, with this obsession with this, rather than you think maybe you just want to get on and live your life and be a better person and try to make a better life. But no, you're so obsessed with the end of this that you're going to make everyone else miserable as well. And that's where I think it becomes dangerous.
Well, and it, I noticed like, and I hadn't known, this is not end of the world per se, but I just talking about cults in general, which do play a big part in these stories, that there was a cult led by, I forget the name of the person, who a couple of years ago, I think it was like maybe the 60th or 50th anniversary of JFK's assassination, that it was like a religious sort of belief that JFK is going to come back on the grassy knoll. Literally, I'm not kidding, in out in Texas and Dallas, and that that was the prophecy that was coming back. And it's like, it wasn't like there is one or two people that believed. There was a lot of people who totally bought into this.
Yeah, it's the sort of mass hysteria can take effect very quickly. And you can see that sort of thing, that people will start to believe something that they want to believe. I remember reading about that. Yeah, it's really disturbing and fascinating.
At the same time. Well, we kind of like the macabre in some way, right? If I'm going to read a book about the different ways that people thought the world's going to end and you're going to write about it. That's right. Thank you, Chuck. The Anon cult.
It was a QAnon offshoot, I think, or something.
It totally was. Thank you.
That's right.
Now Emily brought up something, and folks, feel free to put any comments or questions in the comments section tonight, and we will see what Tim's knowledge is of how we're all gonna die.
Hey, don't put that on me.
You were wrong.
I'm not making any predictions. I'm just telling you what other people said.
Yeah, you're not.
I'm just the messenger.
You don't have a date for me to go up on a hill and be like, take me. You know, I do it every day, regardless.
Exactly, just to be sure.
Emily says, you know, I'm surprised cults aren't more popular these days. We're just sunshine tonight. It seems like people join cults for belonging. With how lonely and disconnected we are, I'm shocked that they aren't more popular.
Well, I think they can take on trappings beyond religious. You can have political cults. You can have cults of personality around celebrities. You can have, you know, all these sorts of things. You know, I think that I think people are always looking for community and belonging, no matter what that is. And it might be a religious expression, but it might also be a political expression. It could be the cult around your favorite band. It could be the fanatics for a certain musicians, or it could be, you know, something for, you know. So I think they are kind of in that sense. The question is, we all want to feel like we belong. We all want to find others that think the same way we do. And it doesn't necessarily have to be spiritual and religious. It can be other things as well. And again, it can become dangerous. The Nazis were a cult in a very real sense. They absolutely encouraged in Germany. They encouraged with the lighting and the spectacle. They turned their rallies into rituals. And, you know, that was a very real thing that wasn't religious. They clothed it in a trapping of religion, but you would find that, you know, some people would say like QAnon is a cult as well, as people that desperately want to believe in something. And they're believing in some really harebrained, crazy ideas that there's just no evidence for whatsoever, but it gives them a sense of belonging, of like being with a group of other people that they have a secret knowledge. And I think that's it. There's a thing about conspiracy theories where if you're in on the secret, that makes you special, you know, that's something like, well, we know the secret knowledge that nobody else does. We're special. And I think that does give people a very strong sense of belonging. And that's something that cult leaders can tap into. We are special. We're going to be taken up to heaven. We're going to be taken away from the spaceship. And so that's very, for people who are lonely, who are disconnected, disaffected, that's a very powerful lure. Maybe they don't have family. Maybe they don't have friends. Maybe they were the outsider, the loner, that they'll be kind of drawn to those sorts of things. So, absolutely. And that can lead you to some dangerous places.
And I think superiority as well, right? I mean, especially for the cult leader. I mean, that was all about power. at the end of the day.
Personality cult of person, absolutely. They can abuse that power for anything from money to sexual favors to whatever they want, you know, and get,
And just so everyone knows, because we're going to move on from the cult topic here in a second, I am going to be doing a episode about Heaven's Gate in May. I have an author on that we're going to be talking about it. So absolutely.
I'll tune in for that.
But one thing, and we're gonna go to break here in a couple minutes, but I do want to say one thing that really stands out to me as far as like 21st century, as far as we're all, you know, the world is going to end. And this is one that Emily brought up, was the Mayans, the Mayan calendar. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm not going to say I was hook, line, and sinker on it, but at the same time, there is always, and I don't know how you feel, Tim, there's always in the back of my mind, is there some truth to this? Mm-hmm. You know, this calendar thing has been going for a long time. Yet the logical person of me is like, but everything comes to an end,
right?
You know, not like Earth or anything, but just nothing is perpetuated for life either.
My understanding about the Mayan calendar is that people, what I've read from some Mayan scholars is that people misinterpreted what it was actually supposed to be. First of all, it wasn't necessarily 2012 because there were various other years it could have been.
Sure.
But the understanding is that it was an end of a calendar, but it was an end of a calendar in the way that December 31st clicks over to January 1st. It didn't mean the end of everything. It just meant, well, that cycle was ended and now we'll start the cycle over again. Kind of, as I was saying, like in Hindu belief, you have these vast amounts of time, the yugas, which we are now in the Kali Yuga, which is the last one, but they can take hundreds of thousands of years before it completes. So the Baktun, I think they're called in Mayan belief, they're long. The periods are like 6,000 years, I think, or something. I might be wrong about that, but it just simply means it clicks over to the next one. It isn't the end of the world, it's the end of the calendar. And I think that there was, like, I remember reading something from a Mayan historian or scholar that said people got that wrong. They didn't understand that, but it was the end. There was nothing after it, so people assumed that must be the end of the world, when no, they just didn't need another calendar because it clicked back over to the beginning again. So, you know, it was that's my understanding.
And I would suppose that this is something, like, I think about the fact that very few major media outlets would have a balanced look at it. It was all about the sensationalization of what this is.
And
that really, I mean, that just adds to, I don't want to call it hysteria. Maybe it was hysteria, but it's wrong information. It's not giving a full picture. And that's, I think that probably plays in some form in probably almost all these stories.
Yeah. Yeah. There was a very funny, and I can read about it, talk about later. It was an interesting conspiracy theory about 2012, which we can talk about later, actually in the program. It's really, it's an interesting one.
Why don't we do this then? Why don't we go ahead? Let's take our first break. When we come back, we're going to, Tim's going to read some passages from the book. We'll talk about the Earth Day subject of the end of the world. Plus, if you have any questions or anything you want to add to it, put in the comments. You're listening to Ghost Box Radio on AM 950. And I just want to let everybody know that Ghost Stories and Beyond returns to Billy's Bar and Grill on May 1st at 6:30 p.m. Join us in the basement of this wonderful restaurant as we're going to play some spirit recordings. And that's always a lot of fun, whether it's EVPs that we've received or pictures that we've taken or pictures and other audio that we like from other locations. We're going to play those on Wednesday, May 1st. Please come out and see us. Don't forget, at Billy's, they have delicious food. They have drinks. $10 to get in for our presentation. That does not include food or drink, but come on down. Have a good time. We love doing this. We love meeting people and talking about spirit communication. So come on out and see us. It's going to be a lot of fun. Welcome back to Ghost Box Radio. And happy Earth Day to everybody. We have on with us author Tim Rayburn. We are talking about his book, A History of the End of the World, Over 75 Tales of Armageddon and Global Extinction, From Ancient Beliefs to Prophecies and Scientific Predictions. This book is available on Amazon, so please go out there, check it out, get the book, read it, give us your thoughts on it as well. obviously not before the end of the show, but, you know, I mean, maybe. I mean, there's speed readers, right? I don't know.
Buy it in the middle of the show. That's fine. You can download it on. It's probably on. I believe there's an ebook. You can just download it and start reading right now if you want.
I contend that my listeners are very smart. So, you know, I'm not backing down from the statement. You know, if you read it in the next, you know, 30 minutes, let us know what you think.
Just don't point out any typos, please.
Yeah, right. Exactly. But man, this is an interesting conversation. Mm-hmm. And in the comments, Chuck had also put in there, he just even mentioned like Y2K. And I it's funny how we have these moments, but some of us forget about them really quickly once they pass, don't we?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting. Remember the Y2K panic? That was, and the thing is, it was actually a genuine concern. The reason that it ended up being kind of a nothing burger in the end is because lots of engineers did a lot of work behind the scenes to make sure that it wasn't. So if they'd done nothing, it probably would have caused. Now, it would not have caused the meltdown of civilization that some people were predicting. But yeah, there were a lot of problems behind the scenes that I remember. I knew some engineers. I was working in technical writing at the time, and I remember some engineers talking about all the work they had to do to do things over. So it was a kind of concerted effort that actually brought it to the status of where it was nothing more than minor glitches. But it could have been it would not have been a civilization-ending event, but it could have caused some real headaches and problems for people, very definitely.
I've seen people in the comments here talking a little bit about it. Emily said that she fell for it hardcore. I think a lot of people did. There's nothing wrong. I'll tell you though, I remember I was sick as a dog, so I couldn't, you know, but if I wasn't, so I you know, I could have all obliviously happened to me and I'd have no idea. But I was supposed to, actually, because I work in production, television production, I was actually supposed to go down to Paisley Park and do camera work on a live show for Prince.
Okay.
That would have been cool. But nope, I was sick, and that was the end of that. So there you go. And we, you know, and you know, all the cameras would have, you know, everything would have shut down and stuff. But yeah, that was interesting. And, you know, I mean, once again, I think it's news. People should know about it, but it felt like that the hype was causing people a lot of anxiety.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there's going to be opportunists. There were so many books, I remember, in the run, the second half of 1999, the number of books for how to prepare and how to purify your own water and pack your own, can your own food and all of this. There were so many of those things showing up in bookstores everywhere that, you know, a lot of people were taking advantage of that and writing, you know, rattling off quick sort of things of websites and such. So there was a lot of money to be made on that sort of thing, definitely.
Well, and Emily says that she was 12. She's like, 'cause I was 12. So, I mean, and here's the thing. I remember when I was, you know, 9, 10, back in the 80s, I think the film was called The Man Who Could See Tomorrow or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
It was Orson Welles talking about Nostradamus and talking about how I took that as gospel. I took that as like, we're screwed, and the 90s are going to be, we're not going to get past the 90s. It actually really affected me. And those are things that, you know, I don't know if there's a responsibility for people, because it is what it is. It's not their fault that I'm taking it so seriously, but it affected my life. I'm not going to lie.
Oh yeah. 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 Nostradamus is one of those that definitely has, you know, lots of people have milked his stuff for a lot of money over the years. And the fact is that they're deliberately cryptic, and they don't necessarily, so much you'll find with a lot of these things, and this goes all the way back to ancient times, is that so-called predictions of the future are often commentaries on the political situations of the time.
So much
and
so.
This is a big thing that people then centuries later look at it and think that they're trying to relate it to something that happens in the future, when it really was actually a commentary on their own time. And what that shows is that it's not a prediction about the future, but it is timeless in its own sense. It shows that these things never change, and that we can adapt statements about past times to our own time. Shows that, like, well, we kind of have this human nature that never changes, really. And it's that in of itself is, so it is a prediction that people are always going to be the same. And that's something I find really fascinating.
I think that's such a good point, because when I'm thinking about that film, you know, they make in that film at the time, they make the hint that the third Antichrist is Gaddafi. And that's very apropos for the time. Then you go to the 90s and the Antichrist is Saddam Hussein.
Sure.
You know, I mean, so to your point, I think you made such a great point about that, is that's what something we have to look out for.
Yeah.
Is what is happening. And I can only imagine now who the third Antichrist is now. You know, next. It just, I mean,
yeah.
And that goes into cultism, I think, as well.
It does. Yeah. And there's, and again, all of that is not, again, lots of people follow, but there's nothing biblical about that. It's just something that somebody made a statement about. And it was pretty common in the Middle Ages and Renaissance to call your enemies sort of enemies of God or Antichrist. So that kind of thing was very popular. So Dante did it throughout the entire Divine Comedy. He spent the, as people joke, that's like, it's a self-insert fan fiction of him and Virgil basically criticizing everybody he doesn't like, you know, and it takes on this kind of thing of all of these theological trappings, but it's really just him making commentary on the terrible situations in Italy in his time. So, you know, there's a lot of that kind of thing that happens. And some people do it in fiction, some people do it in predictions. Mm-hmm. You know, there's that sort of, and even going back to biblical times as well, a lot of people look at, and this is something a lot of people are quite shocked to hear, but a lot of the revelation things in the book of Revelation aren't predictions of what happens in the future. They're actually statements through coded language of things that were happening to Jewish Christians or Jews and Jewish Christians in Jerusalem under Roman occupation. So, and people often don't realize this, that the beast and such actually refers to the Roman Empire. Now, it can be taken out of that context and put into any era, but it's actually referring to oppressive governments, to people that, you know, and that's what was happening. Their world was coming to an end. The temple had been destroyed. Masada had been taken. There was no more Israel. So, of course, it was the end of their world. Absolutely. In a very real sense, it was the end of their world, but it wasn't the end of the world. So they started using these coded languages, looking back to their own history to talk about the end of the world as they saw it. And this is something with a lot of predictions are really are these kinds of things. They use coded language and mythic imagery to describe things in their own time that are applicable to all times in some ways, but it's not a specific prediction of a future event.
That's so interesting. God, that's so interesting. Once again, folks, if that doesn't whet your appetite to get this book, the book is called A History of the End of the World, Over 75 Tales of Armageddon and Global Extinction, From Ancient Beliefs to Prophecies and Scientific Predictions. The author and our guest tonight is Tim Rayborn. You can get it through Amazon. Chuck had mentioned that I should put it on my Ghostbox Book Club link. Amazon, oh, sure. Amazon cut me off. I can't. I don't understand.
You can also buy it at Barnes and Noble or Barnes and Noble or any of those other places. Any online retailer will have it. So it's through HarperCollins. So it should be available anywhere.
Now, Emily asked the question.
Store, your local bookstore.
Emily asked the question, do you have a favorite doomsday story that you've come across? And also, you know, because we want to hear you read some stuff. Do you have anything that kind of correlates into that question that you would like to read?
Yeah, I have a bunch. I actually selected some things from the book, and I tried to avoid, I mean, I talk about all the usual things. We have climate change, asteroid impacts, nuclear war, pandemics, all those are kind of things we're familiar, but there's some really interesting ones, both in myth and in science and stuff, which some people don't know as much about. One of my favorites, of course, and I think that it's something that it's overused these days, is the Norse Viking story of Ragnarok, which is something you hear all the time in Viking metal and on TV shows and such. And people just assume that the Vikings and the Norse people lived with this myth of an end of time that would be consumed by fire. The interesting thing about it is that we don't have a lot of evidence that this was believed outside of Iceland at all. There's the Anglo-Saxons and the Germans who shared the same gods, the same beliefs. They have no reference to this whatsoever. Mm-hmm. There's a smattering of things possibly in Norway and Sweden that allude to it. But, you know, it's built in these days in pop culture is the thing that is absolutely inextricable to Viking belief. And all Vikings wanted to die in battle to go and be in Valhalla with Odin so they could fight in Ragnarok. And there's really not a lot of evidence for that. This is kind of like a modern interpretation based on 13th century Christian interpretations of something that they didn't really understand. And a lot of the theory is that the Ragnarok belief itself, that the world would end in fire, actually comes from their geography, from seeing the explosions of the volcanoes. And their creation myth also was the mingling of ice and fire. Well, what happens in Iceland? The lava flows down to the ice and the glaciers, and you have a mingling of ice and fire. So it's both creative and destructive. So I find that absolutely fascinating, that this thing that is so inextricably bound up with Viking culture and Norse culture really probably wasn't widely believed at all, at least not until maybe the 10th, 11th century when Christians started interpreting it. And they wanted to interpret it in view of their own apocalyptic, you know, sort of things as well. So, you know, when you start digging into these things, you find some interesting, you know, interesting facts like that. Which I find are really amazing.
I'm sure. Did you want to read something?
Well, I have a bunch of selections here. Let me pull up one. There's an interesting one, the Hopi prophecies, if we're going to look at ancient myths and prophecies. And those are rather unsettling, it must be said.
And I have about 6 to 8 minutes before I need to go to break, if that works.
It won't take that long. No. Yeah. yeah, let me put on my reading glasses here. I'm getting too old. The world may be ending, but I still need my reading glasses. So, so the native Hopi of Arizona have some interesting, what they call the nine signs of the end of the world. Now, some people think that these were things that they developed later after the coming of the Western settlers, the coming of American settlers, but some say that they may have existed prior. They're absolutely fascinating. So the Hopi of Arizona have one of the more detailed sets of predictions about what is to come during the run-up to the end of the world. Mm-hmm. These prophecies have been made, as far as we know, before the arrival of European settlers, and some are rather disturbing, to say the least. The Hopi believe that there are four ages to the world. The first was destroyed by fire, the second by ice, the third by a great flood. We are now living in the fourth and final age, and the signs that it will soon end are all around us. Although there are different beliefs and traditions that the Native American peoples have not shared with outsiders, most agree that there are nine signs of the coming end. 1, light-skinned invaders will arrive. Well, yes, obviously. 2, there would be spinning wheels filled with voices. Maybe this is the settlers and their covered wagons gathering in long trains as they travel west. 3, an unusual animal like the bison, but with different horns, would appear on the plains. Settlers brought large numbers of European cattle with them. 4, the land will be visited by snakes of iron. Possibly a reference to trains? Mm. 5, the land will be covered in a giant spider's web. This might refer to the railway network that was built to support train travel, or possibly telegraph and phone lines. 6, the land will become covered in rivers of stone. That would seem to be our highway system. Mm-hmm. 7, the sea will turn black and many things will die when it does. An oil spill, perhaps? 8, young people of other lands and peoples would want to learn about the Hopi and their native wisdom. There's certainly been a growing interest in the teaching of Native Americans and other indigenous peoples around the world in the last 50 years. 9, the final sign is that people would live in the sky, but this home would eventually crash into the earth, looking like a star landing in the sky. Now, is that an international space station? Is that a space shuttle? Is that something? So, after this last sign, the beginning of the end will commence. There will be war, destruction, misery, and death, and everyone will have to cooperate just to survive. So it's fascinating. You know, you look at this, and it's, was this informed by Western settlers, or did they make these predictions beforehand? We don't really know.
Well, and it's interesting, too, because if they made those predictions themselves, they saw this. Did they see it actually contributing to the end of the world, or is it just that it's so scary to them that this is stuff that they're thinking that this is going to be the end because of all these atrocities that are happening?
And it's the end of their world, very much. Totally. You know, whether that's the thing, if these were informed by that, then it was absolutely the end of their way of life, you know, and tragically they were absolutely, you know, slaughtered in large numbers. The bison were slaughtered in large numbers and such. And yeah, so it was very much an apocalypse for their culture, absolutely for many Native cultures.
Wow. It is, honestly, this is so fascinating and so interesting to see. Why don't we go ahead and do this? Let's go ahead, take our next break. Sure. When we come back, let's continue talking about this. Let's get one more passage in at least. And,
I'd like to get some scientific ones. The actual scientific predictions are fascinating and very unsettling. So.
Let's do it. And then anyone have any questions? Go ahead, put them in the comments. You're listening to Ghost Box Radio on AM 950. And join me tomorrow on Ghost Box Radio with Greg Bakken. We are going to be, since it's April and it's Tornado Awareness Month and we are in Minnesota, I figured it'd make the most sense to bring on Storm Chaser Justin Wenzel. He's going to be talking about the work that he does, capturing images of tornadoes and forest fires and all sorts of activities, stuff that basically is the end of the world. The thing about Justin as well is that a little insight to Justin is that his wife, Amy, used to own my cat, Linus. So I got Linus from her, and that's always something very special. But I'm looking forward to having Justin on tomorrow, as storm chasing is something that is very close to me, and I love it, and he has made a profession of it, and he is very good at it. So it's going to be a great conversation. And then, of course, as you heard on the commercials, Refined Divine is going to be on Wednesday for one question readings. That's always a lot of fun. Don't forget, it's much easier to get your question read if you call in. And then Thursday, we're going to replay an episode with Meg Bartlett about a nightmare interpretation. Then finally, Friday is Casual Friday. We are talking with author Tim Rayborn. We are talking about his book, A History of the End of the World, Over 75 tales of Armageddon and global extinction, from ancient beliefs to prophecies and scientific predictions. And, you know, when I was thinking about stuff, Tim, I think the thing that comes to mind a lot that I think it's kind of unfortunate in a sense is that when we're having particularly bad weather, such as, you know, lots of forest fires and wildfires and stuff like that, to excuse the expression, but that's fuel for people to be like, see, it's coming, it's happening.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, and absolutely. And I think that there is a very real scientific, you know, basis for the climate, you know, climate issues and problems that are real. And this is it's not to in any way diminish that. That's a very serious danger. And yeah, we have them here in the Pacific Northwest as well. There never used to be terrible forest fires. And now most summers we have at least some days that are very smoky and advise you not to go outside. And, you know, it does. It starts weighing down on your psyche emotionally after a while. You know, you definitely see that, and it's depressing, and it wears you down, and you think, well, wow, what really is happening here? We do see that the world is heating up, and this is a problem. Absolutely.
Tim, do you want to know what wears me down, Tim? I'll tell you what wears me down is when people come on here with comments like this. How many tornadoes in Minnesota besides the Vikings play calling? I think that's just uncalled for, Chuck. I don't know what that's about. I don't know. Where's that block button? Anyway, for those who don't know, the Vikings are horrible, and that they will be for probably the rest of my life. So let's get back on track here. And I think I have a long time to live. That's, you know, even worse. So maybe that's a sign, probably some biblical thing. That's the sign is like, if Vikings win a Super Bowl, that will be a sign that the earth is free falling out of space into the sun. That's funny. All right. I want to get to some more of your readings, because I want to make sure we get at least one or two more in.
Yeah,
because
a couple more in. Sure. I'd love to talk about, well, there's a whole bunch, as you say. There's a lot of things that sort of we talk about, like with Earth-based things. There's asteroid strikes, there's solar flares, there's all those kinds of things, and those are scary. Solar flares. We haven't had a solar flare of the kind that bombarded the world in the 19th century in well over 100 years. And when that happens, it's going to knock out all of our satellites and very probably the internet, possibly for months. And we're really not doing a whole lot to prepare for that. Didn't matter in pre-industrial society, but it matters a lot now. So
of course there's that.
But one of the ones that I love talking about that will probably leave people fairly unsettled for a while, and that's what I'm here for, is the
Happy Earth Day.
The death of the universe via vacuum decay is one of my favorites. This is one that physicists bandy around. So, as I say, this has nothing to do with the machine you use to clean floors breaking down. It's actually one of the more frightening concepts about the potential end of the world, potential end of the universe, a rather complex theory that says a universe at a fundamental level can be in one of two states: a true vacuum, which is a very stable state where very little happens, and a false vacuum known as a metastable universe. Studies of subatomic particles have suggested that our universe is a false vacuum. These kinds of universes are less stable than those in a true vacuum, and an event with enough energy could cause a very big problem. This issue could occur at the subatomic level, with a large enough disturbance causing a tiny portion of the false vacuum to turn into a true vacuum. Such a transformation would be bad, very bad. This bubble of true vacuum universe would begin to expand very rapidly at the speed of light, and as it did, it would destroy everything in its path, as in completely wipe it out. Because it is traveling at the speed of light, we might not ever even see it coming, and even if we did, there would be nothing we could do. One of the more terrifying thoughts is that this might have already happened somewhere way out in the universe, and the bubble is expanding even now, destroying everything as it grows. Of course, the universe being as big as it is, it would still take billions of years for the bubble to expand far enough to wipe out all the stars and galaxies, but it could be out there somewhere hurtling toward us. Because the light of distant galaxies is only reaching us now, those galaxies could have been destroyed millions of years ago, and we just don't know it. There is an area of space called the Bootis Void that is mysteriously has almost no galaxies at all. Its center is more than 700 million light years away, and no one knows for sure why this area of space is so empty. Is an expanding true vacuum bubble out there wiping out galaxies as it grows? It's a scary thought, though not believed to be too likely. Most scientists think the chance of a true vacuum could actually expand in our universe is low. Some have suggested that even if it could, it wouldn't happen for several billion years. But you never know. We could have an annihilation event coming right at us at light speed, and we'd never even see it coming.
Well, you know, and here's the thing, the side effect to this, in a sense, say that something like that is happening, what does the scientific community do? Do they let all of us know, or do we just get sucked in? Because the one thing I think about is when civilization found out that we have to be on lockdown, we hit all the toilet paper. Yeah. Something like this is going to be like everybody for themselves, and it's going to be ugly.
It would create its own kind of end of civilization just by people's reactions, really, anarchy, and things break down when that happens. So that's a popular recurring theme in conspiracy theories, is that they know something is happening, but they're not going to tell anybody in order to avoid a panic. This is one of the main, like, even if there were an asteroid hurtling at us or a false vacuum, they would never say anything because they would never actually say anything because it would cause the breakdown of civilization. So better that people don't know until it's too late.
Totally. I mean, it's very interesting. I'll tell you what scares the hell out of me. Super volcano.
Yeah. Oh yeah. The one under Yellowstone.
Totally. Yep. Because
it's a real thing.
And people are like, well, it's, it erupts every 525,000 years. Well,
something like that.
How long ago did it erupt? 525,000 years ago.
Yeah.
All right.
Exactly. Yeah. I live in Southern Washington, right near Mount St. Helens, actually.
Oh, geez.
Where it's just it's round, like the entire top blew off and you can see it. Yep. It's amazing. And you can see it from town. It's like, I can't imagine what that must have been like on the day when it was just spewing ash and roaring and you could see it as far away as Portland. It's terrifying. So
I don't
feel
know.
Very small.
I don't know how long after it erupted that we went out as a family. We went to Seattle. And from the top of the Space Needle, we were able to use one of the little telescope things and kind of see it. I mean, it had been much later than I thought because there was like no smoke or anything emitting from it.
Right.
But still, no.
It's been dormant for decades now, but occasionally we get earthquakes and it rumbles a little bit. So like you say about the supervolcano, absolutely. The Earth is a very active place and it doesn't care whether we are here or not.
And I haven't thought about supervolcano for years until right now. God bless it. So we're talking to Tim Rayburn, who is the author who also tries to wreck people's lives, apparently. He wrote the book A History of the End of the World, Over 75 Tales of Armageddon and Global Extinction, From Ancient Beliefs to Prophecy and Scientific Predictions, available at Barnes & Noble and Amazon. You know, we have about 6 minutes left or so. Okay. What do you got for us?
Well, there was a curious conspiracy theory that happened after 2012 failed to manifest that said that 2012 actually did happen, but that a team of scientists actually saved the world and we're now living in a simulation. So there's that.
This is a crappy simulation, if that's really what's going on here.
The interesting theory is some of them say it actually 2012 didn't happen in 2012, but actually in 2020, which is why there's the pandemic and all these other things.
And the restart.
There's that as well. So, yeah. Then I have a section in my book about real life zombie apocalypses, how those could happen. It's not, it's very different from The Walking Dead, but there's a number of different things that could take control of people's brains and basically rot them. There's the whole, there's that television series, The Last of Us on HBO, which is about how mushrooms can mutate to take, and there's no reason why that couldn't happen. There's parasites that can invade ants' brains, and for now they only invade ants, but if they ever decided to jump species, you could have a 28 days later type situation with those. There was a great article online some years ago called Six Ways the Zombie Apocalypse Could Actually Happen. And it was pretty unsettling. So
I forgot about the mushroom things that turned out to be. But it's not just like one. You have to have a lot, right?
Right. I think the thing with that was that they can't survive at temperatures over 94 degrees right now. And our bodies are 98.6. So it prevents that kind of infection. But if they were ever to evolve to that point, which is what the television show is about, there's no reason why the spores couldn't infect humans the same way they infect insects and do exactly the same thing and turn everybody into, mindless zombies. So,
God, it's incredible. It's incredible. And, as far as I find the simulation thing very fascinating as well, because it's like, I wonder, I mean, obviously there's people who do believe it. They do believe that they're in a simulation.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's some odds makers and scientists say that the chance that we're living in what's called base reality, meaning the real world is only about 50%. It's about 50-50. And there's a 50-50 chance that we might be living in a simulation already. So, you know, the problem with that is unfalsifiable. There's no way you can test that at this point. We have no way of knowing. But, you know, what if we are and the simulators just decide one day they're done and decide to, turn the computer off. We're done. So, you know, and we never even know.
Or there's like a shutdown program that gives it like the end of the world sort of scenario.
Sure. You have to start over, you were playing the old SimCity games and things, and you could like bring disasters in with the push of a button, basically, you know. Yeah. Seems like that's kind of happening these days. So.
I loved playing SimCity, and I bypassed it. So you're not playing the game, you're just building stuff and destroying stuff. And you think to yourself, that's what a lot of some of these programs are based off, that there's like some sort of meta level to this, that we actually did create life during this game, and we are playing God. Is someone doing that to us right now?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's a terrifying thought.
it makes my head spin.
It does. Yeah. I think it's funny because I enjoyed writing this book, but I never got too down the rabbit hole with it. I kind of looked at them all for what they are, and it's like, we're here now, we're alive, we've got to live our lives and try to do the best we can. And I think you look at ancient myths, and ancient myths about the end of the world are more about their lives and their world than they are about anything in the future. And I think any scientific things have to be, weighed fairly and evenly. And, the Earth has been around for a long, long time, and we're not going to be around as long as it is, but, it's not going anywhere anytime soon, so I don't let it keep me awake at night.
Do you feel, and this is actually probably a question that I really shouldn't ask you, because this is more of a personal thought than from the book or anything, but, I mean, I always kind of got the impression that, like, a nuclear ending seems less likely than a natural one or something
that's
out of our control.
That's my thought as well. Honestly, I think that our undoing will probably be a pandemic again or something like that, honestly. That's what tends to cull populations, it's that sort of thing that if anything were to happen, it's probably something that's going to be natural. Volcanic activity combined with climate change, combined with pandemics, combined with crop failures. It'll be that sort of thing that I think that we need to be. And those are things we can change now. That's actually in our hands. So that's something that could be helpful about.
Well, and the thing about say wildfires, I mean, that's purification. That's always been purification of the earth. The problem is that, I'm not sure if we were really meant to be inhabiting the population density that we are.
That's part of the problem. Yeah. But then pandemics do that. They cull species. So, the new bird flu that's been going around right now, it so far has not been transmittable human to human, but it jumps species and it has a 52% mortality rate. So, if it finds a way to embed itself in a human and then jump from other humans, then we could be in real trouble with that. That's something that we need to look at.
Well, and also, I say this very carefully because a lot of people have lost loved ones with COVID, but
absolutely.
It's like, what stage are we not supposed to interfere with different types of pandemics and stuff, as long as it's not human made,
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. It's there's a lot of ethical questions and things there too. So,
absolutely incredible. Once again, the book is called A History of the End of the World, Over 75 Tales of Armageddon and Global Extinction from Ancient Beliefs to Prophecies and Scientific Predictions. Author Tim Rayburn. Once again, my friends, you have to go out and get this book. This is really cool. I'm looking forward. I got to read this myself. Yeah.
I enjoyed writing it, so I hope you enjoy reading it.
Absolutely. Tim, thank you so much for joining me tonight. Really appreciate it.
Really enjoy it. Happy to come by anytime. I really enjoy it.
Absolutely. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. First of all, happy heavenly birthday to my father today. And also, we'll see you all tomorrow talking about tornadoes. Everyone, take care.